Tonight, conspiracies, hypermilitarization of police, and so much more. How about RoboCop? And don't forget our Insta poll up there at coasttocoastam.com. Here the question is, do you believe that local law enforcement in America has become overarmed and excessively militarized? You can vote. The question is yes, lethal military hardware is unwarranted for use in communities. No, such tactics are often needed to combat the crime, terrorism, and unrest. And then there's uncertain. So go vote. It's our Insta poll at coasttocoastam.com. And we shall be back in a moment with Lionel on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to cover a lot of ground in the next couple hours with Lionel. And his book, by the way, is Everyone is Crazy Except You and Me. And I'm Not So Sure About You. Lionel is a television and radio news decoder, a legal analyst, a lawyer. He is an author, television commentator, and he's done it all. Lionel, always good to have you back.
It is so terrific to be here. And by the way, before we get started, let me compliment you and your staff as being the most thorough radio folks I've had the pleasure of associating with.
Well, thank you.
From your engineers to your support staff to your producers to Lisa, excellent, excellent, excellent.
They are the best. They keep propping me up, Lionel.
Let me tell you something. I've been doing this, George, as you know, since the Truman administration, and I can tell you that normally, especially sometimes when you get into the witching hour, you get folks who, perhaps, not that this is the witching hour, but let me just tell you that, you know, the finer aspects of human conviviality are not their strong suit. So anyway, hats off to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Now, tonight, let's talk about things that are happening all around the planet. You can't go anywhere without something being chaotic, controversial. It's amazing. What's going on?
Well, you can do one of two things. First, you can say this is just the normal course of human civilization.
Of life.
Evolution.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like, well, you know, that's the way things are. Or you can say it's almost by design.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as though there are people who benefit greatly from this and go out of their way to create the image, the meme, using the Dawkins term, the memetics meme, that there is chaos, that there's racial discord, that there's racial disharmony, that there's problems on the street, that you need us to protect you. You know, it's been talked about many times, this notion of the Hegelian dialectic. Boy, that'll put people to sleep as they go, oh, God. But it's a wonderful concept. And it's the notion, George, of problem, reaction, solution. Let's say that you and I were leaders of the world. We're part of the elite, the ruling class, the globalist, whatever you want to call these people. And we thrive, George, when things are chaotic.
Exactly.
So we create a problem. Now that we get into my hop, lie hop, we make a problem happen, we let it happen, we look the other way, we get with our folks in the media to create the meme, this idea, this theme that there's chaos. So we get people stirred up and scared. And that's the problem, step one, this troika. Step two, the reaction. Help! Help us! What will we do? Please, government. Please, help us. Protect us. Okay, we'll do that. We have the solution for you. Problem, reaction, solution. And the solution is going to be the hyper-militarized police and security. Those individuals, George, who are looking out for you. Are you sure you want this? Oh, yes, government. Help us. Okay. Well, we know just what to do. Never fear. Your government's here. This is at all levels. And what happens is people, when they look and they see this interesting transition of how Sheriff Andy and even Barn, remember, George, the days of Adam 12.
Mm.
Blue Night, Columbo. I was watching, my wife and I were watching old Columbos.
Classics.
Never popped a kid for smoking a joint. Never even carried a gun. there was a scene where he arrested a woman and never even had handcuffs. This is unheard of. No Miranda warnings, no freeze. Sheriff Andy, you know, I sometimes look at American pop culture as an indicium or an indication of kind of where we're going and where we've been. I want you to think back to how prescient and how vatic and pythonic and how incredibly important Andy Taylor was in Mayberry. This is the height of the Vietnam War. And there was this gentrified kind of a cow poke bunkum hayseed, but a man of incredible wisdom and who never carried a gun, who didn't want to be the cop, but wanted to be your friend. It was the guy, George, who was the cop in the neighborhood. Remember, I'm not sure where you're growing up, but I remember whenever there was on Sunday, you would see the cop directing traffic coming out of church. And it was the cop was the guy you knew. He was the neighbor of yours. It was that's Sarah's dad. It was the fellow who was your neighbor. He was the constable, the peace officer, Norman Rockwell's cop, who finds the missing young man, takes him to a diner to have ice cream. He has the proverbial, remember, the knapsack and the stick, the hobo image. You're running away, son. Well, that's not the way to do it. But before we call and send you home, how about some ice cream, little Georgie? These concepts, the kids today are saying, who is this? What is this guy?
That doesn't happen anymore.
No. Absolutely not. In members of the African-American or lower socioeconomic, not that the two are synonymous, but George, I think it's not alien to you. You've known people, maybe yourself, where you were out one night carousing and maybe someplace you shouldn't have been. The cop brings you home to the Nuri homestead.
No, that's never happened to me.
Well,
not yet.
But you've heard of it. Luckily for me, it never happened. I was too frightened by my parents to do anything stupid, or I was just lucky. But there was this idea of, Mrs. Johnson, yes, little Timmy's been out joyriding. Joyriding. Listen to that. What is that, Dad? Oh, they would take a car. So anyway, there were a lot of black kids in the country who will look at you and say, what are you talking about? What plan? I don't know anybody who was ever taken home. Now, that's a subtext there. So what's happening? What happened to the policeman? What happened? Going back to pop culture again, there was a show called SWAT. It was ABC, I think. And SWAT, Special Weapons and Tactics, when the word was introduced into our vernacular. And what happened was very interesting was whenever they would dispatch the SWAT team, would be met by this big, bulky, ugly truck. And they would change into their SWAT materials, their equipment, from the regular, you know, uniform.
But you were safe in that truck.
Yes, but there was a transition. Sheriff Andy is now going to be militarized, but just for a moment, just until this situation is quelled, just until the bad guy is put down, or that's a bad phrase, but and then we're going to switch back. We're going to go back to normal with the blue shirt, with the name tag. The name tag. Here I am. Here's my name. I'm one of you. I don't wear a mask. You can see me. I have a hat. I'm your friend. I'm Officer Bumper Morgan again.
Now you're going to have little cameras on your lapel and everything else, huh?
Well, now what happens is people say, you know what? Let's lose the truck. Let's just keep the gear on. Well, I don't know where you are, but in New York.
I'm in L.A. right now.
Right, but I'm sure you've seen, I've got a friend of mine in the West Hollywood area who said he could just stand on the corner in this, it's like, my God, between your sheriff's office and the local LAPD, it's like, what is this? I mean, every 5 seconds, there they are, patrolling, looking for something. Now, You and I can do one of two things. We could say, isn't that great? To serve and protect our men in blue or black or ladies and men, it's wonderful. They're there to help us. Or we could say, my God, we're in an occupied country.
Mm-hmm. I tend to first. I think most of them are doing a great job for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here's the thing. Nobody in the group themselves ever considers themselves to be a part of a marauding, invading group of folks. Most people, and by the way, you have to do this, George. Whenever something happens, you have to give the proviso, the little prefatory statement. And you say, now listen, we're not saying that all cops are bad. We're not 99.
Mm-hmm. You always got to say that.
99%. Yes, we know that. Thank you. And then that somehow gets you off the hook. And you can say what you really feel or what have you. And yes.
About that 1%.
Yes, right. But that, it's funny how we use that term 1% a lot today. But that 1% can wreak havoc. You know, there's a lot of cells in your body that are pretty doggone good. It's that cancer cell we're kind of concerned about. So something has happened. In parts of the world, in fact, in New York, where I am, you can be in the subway and you'll look like, what is this? This looks like this. They went from blue to black. And they started to wear military helmets. And then something very interesting, going back to pop culture again. Do you remember, George, a while back, the great Cool Hand Luke? And there was this one officer who
played
had,
by Paul Newman.
Yes.
Ah. Okay.
Had the, remember the fellow on the horseback? He had the mirrored glasses, and he was the bad guy.
Yeah.
Well, what happens is when you separate somebody's eyes and the ability to see you by the mirrored glass, or a shield, or a helmet, or a mask. Look how people act during Halloween. Something happens to people when you separate this. So now you're giving people, again, more and more equipment. There was something that we learned a couple of years ago, which is very, very important. Two different, I guess, versions of, by the way, his name was Boss Godfrey. Morgan Woodward was the actor. It was this quiet guy. He always had these mirrored sunglasses. Two things happened a while back. The famous Milgram experiment, 1960. The Milgram experiment was a psychologist at Yale. It was during the Eichmann trial, and he was fascinated by how people of normal background, who have families, and could somehow be involved in something as horrible as Holocaust and rounding people up. And he said, could people do this under the guise or directive of I'm following orders? So he created this Milgram, you can Google it. He set up this fake kind of a lab where people off the street would come in and they would participate in a scientific experiment. There'd be a man with a white coat. It was all bogus. But these participants believed, George, that behind the curtain or behind in the other room, there was a person hooked up to these electric wires. And if they got an answer wrong, in a series of questions, they would be shocked. And at first, they could hear these individuals from the other room saying, ow! And the person in the white coat, when seeing that this pretend of this volunteer was distressed, he would say, please continue. And they would up the amperage or the juice until people started to yell louder. And in some cases, they didn't make any noise anymore, thus indicating maybe they were unconscious. As far as this volunteer was concerned, he didn't know. He thought he might have been shocking somebody into unconsciousness, but he continued to do it because he was told to, or it was science. And then 10 years later after that experiment, I mean, people just could not believe, little old ladies, Grandma Jensen and old Doc Weber coming in and shocking people. people that were that would have normally said, "Wait a minute, I'm you can take your experiment and shove it. I'm not gonna." No, no, they were the most compliant. They were zapping people again. Not really, but as far as they were concerned, then in 1970, the Stanford Prison Experiment. And they did this in the basement of the psychology department at Stanford University.
And that was real.
Yes. Well, but right. That was real. That was a pretend prison in which college students, peace, you know, 1970, Vietnam, peace and love, hey. And they separated these people into the inmates and the guards. And one in particular had mirrored glasses. He couldn't see, or actually people couldn't look into his eyes. And what amazed those individuals, those psychologists, how these kids snapped immediately, brutalizing their fellow students who minutes before, an hour before, they were just traversing on the quadrangle or wherever they were. And then all of a sudden, so the point to be made is that when you take these 99%, of any group, put them in a situation, create an us versus them mentality, militarize them, give them the right equipment, the right attitude, the right corporate ethics and, you know, ethos and the way we all talk at roll call, the way we speak about the civilians that we're there to protect, us versus them. You create a situation in which Sheriff Andy is dead, and enter RoboCop.
And we're going to have a lot of RoboCops. I was thinking about that today, looking at some of the older clips of a couple days ago from Paris, where they would have loved to have stormed it right away.
Oh, yeah.
But if you had RoboCop, he could go right in there and do what he had to do.
Well, also remember, the police in France could not respond because they weren't, a lot of them weren't armed.
Most of them weren't armed. That's true. The military, they were armed, but not the cops.
You do notice that, remember, George, let's imagine you and I are part of this elite, sinister world.
We are, aren't
yeah.
we?
Oh, I can't wait. I know you, Nora. You come across as Mr., you know, open-minded. If I know you, you're if you had your druthers, whatever the hell druthers are, my God, you'd flip that switch. But
I would take over.
And people, but it would be a very orderly takeover.
Yes.
As evidenced by your
people would
team.
Welcome it until it was too late.
All the lines would be tested before you spoke. But anyway, let's do this. Let's imagine.
Hold up for a sec. We're at the break already. My gosh, time flies, does it not? Lionel with us. His websites are linked there. He's got Twitter going, too, for him. That's part of our link up for you, too, at coasttocoastam.com. But we'll come back. We'll talk more about just things that are happening in your life right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll let you chime in next hour with Lionel. Well, I'm going to continue chatting with him. Lionel, so what would be wrong with RoboCop?
I love these rhetorical questions. What exactly would be wrong with microwaving small pets? Well, George, you see, in the real world, and only you can ask that, or anybody else, I'd say, what are you, crazy? But you ask, because I'm thinking, wait a minute, maybe he's got a point there.
Maybe he isn't that crazy.
Because of your delivery. By the way, you mentioned Twitter, and I must say that already people are following us as we speak. I'm at Lionel Media. George, I notice you're not a big Twitter user. Maybe you are, aren't you?
Well, we are through the show.
Well, they are, but it is, to me, it is little memes and quanta, little momentary blurts of poetry. It's Twitter will change the world. Facebook is dead.
That's what my granddaughter says, the same thing.
Oh, but she's right, though, because it is for grandma and grandpa. Remember that Twitter is for exhibitionists, but Facebook is for narcissists.
And Snapchat? What is Snapchat for?
Well, that's a sick term on the street, which I think would be wrong in view of your family show. Anyway.
Thank you. So anyway, let's get into. I want to talk about some other things too, because you've got a litany of topics, and you talk about our friend Stanton Friedman a little bit. Elaborate on that.
Well, I had the honor at LionelMedia.com. I did a podcast, just a blast, asking this great man every question I've ever wanted to ask to clarify regarding UFOs and ufology. And
he's amazing.
He is the granddaddy. He is somebody. See, I am a lawyer by profession. That is what I do. And I believe in, when you say evidence of something versus proof, there's a lot of wonderful things out there that I don't know if there's, if there might be evidence of it. I don't know how strong it is. That's for people to decide, but
well, and it depends on what is evidence. Is evidence testimony?
Yes. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
For example, I've heard you say, excuse me, and it's up to people. If somebody says, you know, I had a dream of my aunt.
Who was dead.
She died.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that's, I don't think people are lying. Is that evidence? I don't know. But if somebody said, last night a craft landed in my backyard and left this indented mark here and the radioactive fallout from the particular area, not to mention a, that's evidence.
But could you convict somebody on a dream? I don't think you could.
No.
If somebody says, I had a dream that my neighbor buried his wife in their backyard.
No.
You can't get them on that.
No, and the reason why.
And he may have done that.
It's funny you say that, because it's also great the way you'll say something, and it opens up another area that I never had thought about. In order for you to be a competent witness, you must be under oath, and you must be able to have seen the event, observed the event, smelled it, felt it, touched it, one of the five senses. And you've got to be able to explain somehow what it is that you saw, all under oath. That's competence. Now, how much you saw, how much you heard, how much you felt or touched, that's up for the jury to decide. They may say, yeah, Nuri, yeah, you were there, but we don't think you heard a lot. That's up to the trier of fact to determine how much weight we give it. But that's it. If you dreamt, if you say, you know, I felt something, I felt kind of weird, that's okay sometimes in terms of a prefatory, kind of an introductory statement. But I will tell you something. What's very scary is past lives regression. And you see it a lot of times, and this really scared me when I saw.
And don't forget to come back to Stanton Friedman.
Oh yes, no, forget that. Let's go back to Stanton. No, right. I just did it. Thank you for bringing me back. Stan Friedman is the most important person in the world, and by the way, he talks about Barney and Betty Hill and memories and that sort of thing. But I have not seen a UFO or anything that, or an EB or extraterrestrial biological entity. But I don't know what 100 million people have. And if you think that this is all some conspiracy to fool you, you're out of your mind. I don't want to bring up religion, but everything that is based on religion is somebody having heard something millennia ago. And that suffices fine for one's faith, which is the way it should be. I'm not going to tell you what your faith is, but if that's good enough for you, and you going and changing the course of your life, well, why can't I listen to the Kometa Report or Project Blue Book or the Condon Report or Gordon Cooper or Edgar Mitchell or Rendlesham Forest testimony? Or how about that? Generals and colonels and pilots and astronauts and people. Yes. And it is the most important issue today. And whenever you meet somebody and you bring this up, you can have the believer, the hyper-believer, the insane believer, and then you can have the insane disbeliever. You have a full spectrum of people. There are people who will believe in anything before you even finish the sentence, and they believe it. It's like, wait a minute, take it easy there. You're a little bit too excited. Can you imagine if all of a sudden, from the, I don't know, whatever news organization, Somebody says, we interrupt the Charlie Hebdo marches. We interrupt the Israeli-Palestinian conflicts. We interrupt Pakistan and India. We interrupt Russia versus the West. We interrupt your conflict and artificial problem already in progress. We interrupt that to bring you the following. Members of Earth, what? Wait a minute, you mean Palestinians and Jews? No. Earthlings. Earthlings? We are not alone. We are, here is, and let's assume, as Stan Friedman and others have said, that level of data or evidence, for some reason, and it's there, but people either don't bother looking or they don't want to believe it. But let's assume, George, for the sake of argument, arguendo, as we lawyers say, let's assume that something happened. And it lands on the proverbial White House lawn and all these crazy things. But let's just assume, all of a sudden, do you know what this would do for international problems and nationalism? All of a sudden, Israelis and Palestinians from Jerusalem to Ramallah would say, what are we doing? What are we fighting over? Wait a minute. We are a part of a cosmic mosaic. We are a tile, a little chip of color in this beautiful, universal governments do not want that to happen. Oh, no. We must maintain nationalism and geographical differences. So anyway, so when Stan Friedman suggests this, and by the way, let me just go on record as saying, you know, one of the big rock stars that we have now in the world of science, and kudos to him, is Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yes, he's a monster now, isn't he?
He is
fantastic.
A monster. A little big for his britches, a little too big. He's no Sagan.
Well, the show did that for him.
Well, yeah, but Sagan had a calm, kind of a mature, sober look at it.
Billions anyway, and billions of planets.
That's right. Well, he
pretty good, wasn't it?
It was excellent. The great Johnny Carson moment. But both he and Neil deGrasse Tyson, I respectfully submit, if they're not, sure look like cosmic gatekeepers. Because whenever you bring this up, they say, well, there were evidence of this. And you know, George, I don't have any proof of this. And I'm this is just conjecture, but fantasy. But I imagine this following conversation between Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson, and somebody from some unit or part of the government or I don't know, says, you know, Neil, you enjoy a tremendous status by virtue of your entree and your ability to,
communicate.
Make use of a lot of our technology,
yep.
NASA, and a lot of stuff is kind of top secret, and it would really be a shame if something were to ever get in the way of that, because if you were defanged, if somehow you lost that entree, that special pass, that membership card. So we want you to go out and to inspire the world. But if you ever, ever suggest that there's anything to this, if you validate Stan Friedman or MUFON or any of those folks, if you so much as even insinuate, like Hawking has come very close, like the Vatican has made no bones about it, the Vatican astronomer, absolutely, they've said, of course. But if you ever do that,
they want to baptize them.
Well, maybe not, because changing the subject just a little bit, they may not have original sin. They may not need to be baptized, because understand what that means. We are born, if you believe in this, we are born, Christian belief, with the original sin. You need redemption. You need to be born again. You are
That's
born
right. Very good.
With the state. They may not have that. You talk about putting a guilt trip on people. Not only are they maybe intellectually superior and cosmically superior, They may be spiritually superior. Do you know what? Are you? I mean, do you look what we did to Galileo? We will not. So this nonsense, in fact, what Stan Friedman has done is this nonsense that, well, the reason why the government wants to keep this from us, George, is because the chaos and the mayhem. There's no chaos or mayhem. But whenever you hear Neil deGrasse Tyson and even Sagan, they always poo-pooed it. They laughed at it. They just said, oh, come on, stop it. And I'm just guessing. It would really be a disservice to those of the ruling class because it's not the president. Everybody, I know you know this, but the president does not enjoy top secret clearance. There are levels.
Yeah, they hide things from him.
Of course. So, and it is one of the things that, talking to Stan Friedman, and he's very, very thorough as far as saying, well, I don't know about this.
He calls it the cosmic Watergate, doesn't he?
It is. It is. I mean, I also tell you right now, as Saudi Arabia is artificially dropping oil prices to put pressure on Russia and Gazprom and the BRICS countries, OPEC is hanging on. The petrodollar is moth-eaten and ready for who knows. What if I said, hey, guys, guess what? You know that stuff that you've been fighting over for years? We have this new thing based on the studies of Stanton Friedman and others, based upon anti-gravitic propulsion theories using free energy, Tesla. Like, by the way, I have a wonderful video I did with the great director Robert Downey Sr.
Ah,
on
that's
Tesla.
His,
it's on
was,
my website.
That was his father?
About, yes. This is Robert Downey Sr., an avant-garde film. He did Putney Swope, and he is a man of renown in his own right. But he and I have a conversation about our fascination with Tesla. So can you imagine if one day, through Stan Friedman and others, we say there's a thing called free energy? You are living in this archaic world of burning oil? Do you know what would happen if Wall Street would look around and say, what happened? That the energy that exists in the universe that you can tap into, and you ask me, not you, but people say, well, why would the government want to keep this quiet? What, are you nuts? Are you kidding me? It's the greatest story ever. It is, you know, if you talk to any of the youngsters, it's not like Ed Sullivan, they use the word awesome. That's awesome. Hey, here's a Starbucks. That's awesome. Hey, the movies, that's awesome. No, no, no. Awesome awe is when your mouth drops open. When you drop to your knees, you look up, and you are overwhelmed by the enormity of something. I have not been in awe since I was a kid until Stanton Friedman, until now.
Yeah, he's got magic.
But this is something that, and remember, if tomorrow, through the Charlie Hebdo or whatever it is, if we said, this is silly, think of what it would do to us consciously. What are we doing? We're arguing about an alleged cartoon, and if you want to talk about that, we can. But we're arguing about, we're fighting over this. What are we doing? It will change. You see, when you feel like you're the only game in town, then your immediate problems seem much greater than they actually are. It will destroy nationalism. No country ever wants. And by the way, Ronald Reagan, go back and Google how many times he and Stanton told me that he interviewed, I think it was Ronald Reagan's pilot or somebody. Reagan talked about this all the time.
A lot, yep. Talked about it at the United Nations.
Yep. Nixon, MacArthur, Truman, MKUltra.
Clinton.
Yes.
Clinton. Carter.
Well, yes.
All of them.
Have you seen anything, George? Have you ever had a...
I saw two, what I have to say, were UFOs, because I don't know what they are.
Right.
Through night vision glasses, on the top of a hotel at a UFO conference, mm-hmm. Two objects, must have been 100 miles up, doing 90-degree turns and stopping. And stopping up there. I mean, they'll go whoop. Make a right-hand turn and stop. I mean, what could that be?
Well, people will always make a joke of how you're somehow, you know, what are you doing, George? What are you, you know, are you smoking something? That's the default reflex to this. You know, you mentioned this. Let me ask you this. I have a kind of a fantasy, but I can say this on the air. And I have a fantasy where I say, George, I want you to meet somebody. This is a person, by the way, I've just tweeted the interview with Robert Downey Sr. Senior.
Okay, good.
Just so that people can see this, at Lionel Media. But imagine if I were to sit down and say, I want you to meet this guy. And you say, who is this? George, this is what you would call an extraterrestrial. And he comes in, or she, it, whatever, sits down. And the first thing you'll notice is that it is conversing with you telepathically. There's no vocals, no speaking.
Right. You hear them in your head.
Yes. And I would say to you, they laugh at the notion of you having to vocalize, having to have, vocal cords and accents and things like that. That's so human. And imagine that technology, what that would do to people who cannot speak, who Stephen Hawking, people with strokes, people who have problems. Anyway, in fact, many people have suggested that whenever these critters have been found and we retro-engineered, you mentioned night vision goggles, the Roswell folks and Philip Corso, I don't know how much he is to be believed, but it was suggested that our night vision goggles or night vision technology came through that. That
everything, computer chips, everything came from
that. Oh, yes, fiber optics, and also telepathy. How many times, just Google this, how many times do you see this where somebody says that a person who has lost the use of his or her limbs is able to think about moving objects, able to think.
With a chip.
Yeah, but by being able to harness telepathy.
Yeah.
And imagine this person, this critter that I've introduced you, says telepathically, let me get this straight. You guys are burning what? That's how you fly? You're kidding me. And then you ask, let me ask you a question, Mr. Critter. I was noticing something, and he thinks to you, not says to you, but he thinks, you're George Nuri, aren't you? We know all about you. Thank you.
Yes, I am. We're going to come back in a moment. Hold on, Lionel. A few more stories from you when we come back. Plus, we'll open up the phone lines for people who want to chime in with you. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.